Hello everyone, this is Steve Pollitt, your host for this very valuable and exciting call with Mr. Wayne Allen Root. We'll be discussing a number of major takeaways from his book, The Power of Relentless, that will be released in a couple of weeks. You can pre-order that right now on Amazon.com. A proper introduction of Wayne would take most of this hour. He has so many accomplishments. You actually learn some of them during the call. Briefly, I met Wayne in 2011. I conducted more than 20 hours of interviews with him over nearly a two-year period of time. We've been friends since the first call. I have a deep appreciation for him as a person, all of his accomplishments, and I'm so very grateful for all that I've learned from him. I'm certain that this call will be an amazing and fun experience for you, and you will learn a lot. Wayne, thank you so much for being on the call. I know you're a one-man army, and so your time is very, very much appreciated. How are you?
Hey, Steve, it's great to be on with you and great to be on with everybody, and I hope today to teach you all the most powerful lesson in all of business and all of personal life and all of professional life. In any area you choose, it's about the power of relentless. And they don't teach it to you in grade school, in high school, in college, in grad school. I don't care if you go to law school, medical school, engineering school, you name it. It isn't taught, and you're spending $55,000 to $65,000 a year to attend the best undergrad schools and the best graduate schools in the country or in the world, Oxford and Cambridge. And guess what? Nobody has a course in the power of relentless. And I've met people from all over the world. I've studied them, people who are super achievers, people who are worth $100 million or more. I've managed to, you know, God's blessed me to meet quite a few people that are close to billionaire status and quite a few that are billionaires. And every one of them is relentless. The number one trait they've got in life is they refuse to accept the word no. No one can stop them. They never, ever, ever give up. Once they have a vision and once they have a passion, they just keep going no matter what obstacles get in the way. And that's been the key to my success. That's been the key to my life. And now I've proved that it's the key to the lives of pretty much everyone I've ever met who is super successful.
Wayne, today a very topical discussion is leadership. And you were referring to leadership when you mentioned the successful people that you have met in your career. This leadership can be, you can be a leader in your home, you can be a leader in your community, a leader in your church, and of course a leader in business. How does the power of relentless help someone to be a leader?
Well, you know, people ask me, you know, no matter where I go, it seems like leadership is the question in the business world. Everybody wants to know what makes a person a leader. And so my answer is everything in this book, The Power of Relentless. First of all, if you refuse to give up, wouldn't that make you a leader? Wouldn't you want to follow a person who never gives up? I mean, would you like to work for a person who the minute someone puts up an obstacle, they go, okay, I give up. I surrender. I apologize. What makes a leader is a person that never gives up on their vision. So number one is relentless. That's what makes a leader. Number two is energy and enthusiasm and passion and being a risk taker. You know, show me someone who will lead with energy and enthusiasm and passion and who will take massive risks and who will never, ever give up, and I'll show you a leader. So as an example, in my career, I wanted to be Jimmy the Greek, the number one odds maker in the world, and I became Jimmy the Greek's partner on national TV. That's an amazing end result, right? But in between, failure, 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 11 years of nonstop failure in the word no. I wanted to become a presidential candidate, and I literally spent a year of my life dedicated to running for the Libertarian presidential nomination. I wound up as the vice presidential nominee. I was on the presidential ticket. How many people in the world can say something like that? Great end result, right? But in between, a year of nonstop failure and rejection and people telling me it could not happen. On my 10th book, The Power of Relentless, is my 10th book. And I've been rejected on every one of my books literally hundreds of times. So together, thousands of rejections, and yet 10 books published and lots of money made. You know, I'm on my third TV series, Soul to Hollywood, and this is going to be the biggest one of my life. And one of the other ones is the number one show on Travel Channel for, I believe, 10 straight seasons now. We're going to our 11th season. It's been number one 10 straight seasons. But, you know, no one believed in it at first. No one ever, you know, agreed to let it No one agreed it would ever work, and no one ever believed in it like I did. And thank God I had the passion. I was relentless. You know, I could go on and on. My daughter just graduated Harvard University, magna cum laude, after being homeschooled. And if you ask someone, any expert on education, is it possible to homeschool a kid and she winds up accepted at Harvard University and then winds up being the star of the fencing team and the star of academics at Harvard, they'd say, you're out of your mind. If I told you I'd homeschool my kid, she'd be accepted at every great university in America, Harvard, Stanford, Columbia, Penn, Brown, Duke, Chicago, you name it, they'd say you're out of your mind. But it worked because I was relentless, and I taught her to be relentless. You just keep fighting for 18 years from the day you're born till the day you get that, you know, that big day where you get accepted by college, and she was 12 for 12 on acceptance day. So from all the best colleges in the world, by the way, I might add. So it's all part of being a leader is being relentless and being patient. You know, it took 18 years from the point I had a kid and I said she's going to go to Harvard, and she did. And it took 11 years, going on 12 years, to go from dreaming about being Jimmy the Greek to becoming Jimmy the Greek. And yes, I'm on my 10th book, and on the back of the book, you'll find endorsements from Donald Trump and Steve Forbes, two of the biggest names in the world, Trump and Forbes, wow. But it took me years and years to cultivate those relationships and those friendships to get it. You've got to be relentless, and you've got to be patient, and you've got to be a fighter. And if you do all of those things, you will be a leader. Automatically, people will follow you anywhere. Whereas Winston Churchill once said, you know, when you're walking through hell, just keep fighting, just keep going. And I think if you're walking through hell, you'll follow a leader through hell, and you'll make it out to the other side if they are, in fact, relentless, if they are high energy, enthusiastic, passionate, a risk taker. Those are the things that it comes back to every single time.
Wayne, it's so much fun talking to you because I try to follow some sort of a sequence when asking you questions, and you just blow that idea right out of the water.
Yeah, I probably answered five of them in the first question. Sorry about that, but that's okay. You know. By the way, another one of the great secrets to success I would classify is relentless repetition. Relentless repetition. And I think you can't say something important too many times. So a lot of my stories come back around to the same points again and again and again, but that's okay because, you know, you need to tell the story in 50 different ways, and it needs to always come to the same conclusion, and then finally light bulbs go off and people get it. So there's no reason why you can't, learn to have a little repetition there. So we're fine.
So Wayne, you talk a lot just in the last few minutes about all the no's and all the time. Help us understand the real impact on you and your family on any given day when you're going through this process of working to achieve a goal and being relentless on doing that, but getting the continual barrage of no's.
Well, I mean, it never ends. That's the main point I want people to understand. It never ends. That could be why I'm on my 10th book, and the very first book was called The Joy of Failure 20 years ago. And now we come to the 10th book 20 years later, full circle, and it's called The Power of Relentless. It's the same message, folks. I was getting rejected by every publisher in America until one of them said yes with The Joy of Failure, which ironically was about the topic of failure and rejection, and I overcame it, and the book was published, my first book. And now 20 years later, it's The Power of Relentless, which really is the same exact message that you know, except said in a different way. Instead of talking about, you know, the joy of failure, meaning you've got to overcome failure, and the one failure, the one success out of 20 failures makes you a winner. You know, I used to say, what do you call someone who opens 10 restaurants and 9 of them fail? Millionaire, because you only need one. And so that was the point of The Joy of Failure. And I guess the other way to say it 20 years later, now that I've come out the other end of the pipeline and I'm a self-made millionaire and a famous guy and a successful guy, is I've been relentless all these years to overcome all of those no's. You know, I just can't stress it hard enough, strongly enough, boldly enough. You've got to be relentless. It's more important than how smart you are or your college degree. Now, I did send my daughter to Harvard. I was thrilled that she got in because it's the most famous university in the world and recognized as the best university in America and the world. And no matter where you go in the world, I taught my daughter, even if you go to sub-Saharan Africa, if you ask someone about Harvard, they instantly know the name, but they don't know any other name. Stanford's a great college. It's the Harvard of the West. Yale's a great college. Princeton's a great college. Columbia is a great college. But I'm telling you, if you go to sub-Saharan Africa or Tanzania or New Zealand and you ask about Columbia, they don't know what you're talking about. They think you mean the country in South America. But if you ask them about Harvard, everybody knows Harvard. So I told my daughter, that's a step up in life. That's your entree. That's your door opener for the rest of your life. And that's why you need to get the degree. That's why I need to spend $250,000 to get you the degree, because that shingle will open doors for the rest of your life. But once you go through the door, it's all about being relentless. And if you don't have the Harvard degree, you can jump over, catapult over someone who has it if they're not relentless and you are. And so, you know, again and again, I come back to this will to never give in. My entire book is about one story, Steve. That's really what it's about, many stories, but it all comes down to one story that changed my life. So I might as well use this opportunity fairly early in our interview to tell you the one story that had such an incredible, deep impact on my life, and every time I tell it in the media, it has a deep impact on the lives of everyone that hears it. And it's about my mom's death and the last 12 hours of her life. In 1992, my mom and dad both died of cancer 28 days apart, and it was a tragic, story. It's a tragic story. It was a tragic time in my life. It was a very sad time, and yet, again, you know, nothing is more important to me than turning lemons into lemonade. I was able to turn that tragedy into the most impactful, meaningful learning experience of my life that changed my life and empowered my life, supercharged my life forevermore. My dad died first. He died in about just 4 months or so of lung cancer. He went quick. My mom had breast cancer for 6 long years. And she was such a fighter. She was so relentless. I saw her to the point of death probably between 8 and 12 times. You know, it's so many years ago now, it's hard to remember how many times she was at death's door. But let's just say many, many, many times she was about to die, and the doctors said, it's all over, and say your last goodbyes, and your mom is going to die. And she made a full 100% comeback every time. And the doctors couldn't believe it. She was dying from cancer, she beat cancer. She was dying from cancer, she beat cancer. She's my hero. She was relentless. 6 years she did this. And then when my dad died quickly in 4 months and she was all alone, that was it, no husband after being married almost 50 years, she said at my dad's funeral, she said to me, Wayne, son, I'm going to will myself to die. I don't want to live without your father. And I thought that was the silliest thing I'd ever heard. There's no such thing, right? How do you will yourself to die? I didn't know that was possible. And I thought that was just something that she said in an emotional state, in an hysterical state, and it didn't mean anything. And so I flew back 3,000 miles to my home in California, and next thing I know, it's 28 days later, and the phone rings, and out of the blue, because I didn't know she was getting worse, I had not heard anything, and my mom and dad's doctor, same doctor was taking care of both of them, he calls me and says, Wayne, please sit down. I want you sitting down when I tell you this. And I said, okay. And he says to me, your mom is gone. And I said, what do you mean she's gone? He said, she fell into a coma. We rushed her to the hospital. And she has no brain activity of any kind. She's brain dead. So we've disconnected life support, and she's going to, you know, literally, she's dead now, but for all intents and purposes, but her heart monitor is still going. It'll stop in the next few minutes, and she's gone. There's nothing you could do. You're 3,000 miles away. So there's no point in you rushing home. I know your dad just died. So I don't want you rushing home and getting into any more problems. I don't want any more accidents. I don't want any more tragedies in your family. You've suffered enough, two parents dying in 28 days. So what I want you to do is just, for me, I want you to just take your time, make the funeral arrangements over the phone, get your affairs in order over the phone, her affairs in order over the phone, and fly home, you know, a few days from now. Just relax, take it easy. There's nothing you can do. So I said, okay. So he hands the phone to my sister, who'd been sitting next to him in his office. And my sister says, can I have a few minutes alone with Wayne? He says, sure, and he leaves the room. She waits till he's out of the room because she didn't want to sound like a raving idiot. My sister's a lawyer, keep in mind, and she felt like a raving idiot to say what she was about to say to me. But she said, Wayne, ignore everything the doctor just said and get on the red eye and rush home because you and I both know mom's not going to die till you get here. And I got on the red eye, and I, you know, raced home, raced to the airport, got on the red eye, raced from the airport in New York to her hospital room. Did not believe in my own mind that she'd be alive when I walked in the door, but my sister had spent the entire night holding her hand saying, "Don't die, Wayne's on the way. Don't die, you can't die till Wayne gets here and you say goodbye to Wayne." And so I walked in the hospital room, and the heart monitor 12 hours later was still beeping. Doctors said that wasn't possible. Medical science said that wasn't possible, but she had heard my sister all night long. How do I know? Well, first of all, she was alive when doctors said that would never happen, and I grabbed her and hugged her and told her I loved her. Of course, she was a lifeless body in a coma lying there in front of me with no brain activity, but I told her I loved her, and I told her how brave I thought she was, and I thanked her, and at this point, my sister and I were both crying pretty strongly, and I said, "I love you, Mom, and it's time to go. You fought so hard, but it's time to go." And the heart monitor stopped right there, that second. When I said that second. So here's the question that I have, Steve. If her brain was dead, how did she live 12 hours? How did the heart keep beeping when the doctor said that wasn't possible? How did she know my sister was saying, "Don't die, Wayne's on the way"? And if her brain was dead, how did she know I walked in the room? And how did she know I was telling her, "I love you, I made it, you made it, now it's time to go. You need some rest. Head to heaven, baby. It's time to go." That's literally what I said. And the heart monitor stopped on that spot. And it's an amazing story. And it's sad, but it's not sad. It's tragic, but it's not tragic. It's actually wonderful. Because that story infused my life. That story made my life. That story supercharged my life. Every bit of my success in life happened after that story. Every single success I'm going to tell you about on this phone call happened after that story. That Wow. story was the difference. That story made me understand how important Relentless is. So now I ask you again, going back to the first question, how do you become a leader? What makes people follow people? Well, if your leader could will themselves to live 12 hours after their brain was dead and the doctor said medical science and the doctors told you it was impossible for them to live another few minutes and they were alive 12 hours later, if you could bottle that and you could put it in a business leader or a political leader, wouldn't you follow that person anywhere?
Absolutely.
And that's what changed my life. I became Mr. Relentless, as people call me in the media. I became that only after my mother's story. That's what changed my life.
Wayne, it's really incredible, many of the similarities that we have with our families. You and I have some incredible stories. Your one story about Dakota and then my story about Caitlin. And she is a demonstration for me of Relentless. And today she's just starting her second or third week as a veterinary medicine resident at Michigan State. And
congratulations, Steve.
And she is, I listened to your stories and I read the story, of course, in your book about your mom. And you had a very similar experience with my father, who he lived about a year after my mom died, and you could just see it. And I think people that have parents that have been married a long time, the one parent will not survive very long after their spouse has left, and it's not unusual. But the willpower, and you asked the question about the power of your mom to live those 12 hours, and I've been reading some evidence, scientific evidence, where science is saying, a big part of who we are is in our heart. So it's very, very interesting, and it's certainly your mom is a great testimonial to that.
You know what the final takeaway is, and I mentioned this in the book, that if your heart is big enough, my mom proves it doesn't even matter. If your heart is big enough, it doesn't even matter if your brain is dead. And so, all of success in life comes not from brain power, but from heart power, from spirit, from will. That's the key to success. If your heart is 10 stages bigger than, what an average person's heart is, I guarantee you'll be more successful. And it's all tied to energy and enthusiasm and passion, and then, of course, being a risk taker, taking risks. Most people just, in their lives, they're just not big risk takers. We're taught in school, in college, we're taught the opposite of what makes you successful. The only thing they teach you in college, and just high school in general, they teach you how to be an order taker, a follower. They don't teach you how to open a business, how to be an entrepreneur, and how to risk your money. Nobody teaches you that, and that's a big problem, and that's a big mistake. And you know, in my book, I think nothing is more important section of my book other than my mother's story. If you ask me in order what's the two most important stories, it's my mom's story, number one, and number two is the story of what I call the most relentless people on earth, the Jewish people of Israel. And you know, I tell a story there, and I give you chutzpah as an old Yiddish Jewish word, and this book is really about relentless chutzpah, and we've got 9 principles of relentless chutzpah. Well, nothing is more important than being relentless, nothing, and I prove it again and again in this book, and the people of Israel have great heart.
Wayne, before you go into those 9 points, could you, because this was so fascinating to me, to read all of the things you wrote about the Jewish people, and particularly the Jewish people from Israel and Israel itself. So would you just give us some of those points to help people appreciate, you know, the relentlessness of the Jewish people? It was just incredible.
Yeah, and I saw something just today as we make this, as we do this interview, just today I saw an announcement that the most successful high-tech country in the world besides the United States is Israel. And the United States is 320 million people. Israel has 8 million people. And it's the second most successful high-tech country in the world. Not per capita, not based on size, period. Just of all the countries involved in technology, high technology business, and publicly traded high-tech companies, number one is America, number two is Israel. Amazing. If you talk about the definition of risk-taking, by the way, I would say no better definition of risk-taking than venture capital. Venture capital is, you know, someone's got an idea, and will you give me $10 million to back that idea? I mean, those are the real gunslingers and riverboat gamblers of our world. And all the jobs are created by new startup companies, and the people that put up the money for those companies, they are the gunslingers, they are the risk-takers. And if you look at the number of dollars spent on venture capital in the world based on countries, number one is the United States, number two is, of course, China, and number three is Israel. Again, not per capita, of all dollar for dollar spent, Israel is number three. And that tiny country attracts venture capital at a rate that's 30 times higher than the entire continent of Europe. Israel ranks third in the world for entrepreneurship and has the number one spot among seniors and women. Israel has more high-tech startups per capita, again, this one's based on size, than any nation in the world, including the United States. Israel has more biotech startups per capita than any nation in the world. Israel has more business startups per capita than any nation in the world. Israel has the second most business startups of any country in the world in just pure raw numbers. United States is number one, Israel number two, most business startups. Israel has more companies listed on the NASDAQ stock exchange than any country in the world other than the United States and Canada, more than Europe, India, China, and Japan combined. Relative to population, Israel is the number one immigrant-absorbing nation in the world. Israel leads the world per capita in patents for medical equipment. Israel is the highest computer-to-citizen ratio in the world. Israel citizens have the highest university degree-to-population ratio in the world. And Israel leads the world in the number of scientists and technicians in the workforce with over 25% of its workforce.
Is China, this China study? In fact, you listed about 3 or 4 books in your book that China has a lot of their leadership breed.
Right. So at my events, I give events all over the world teaching people about the power of relentless and branding, and probably the third most important thing, marketing and promotion, which all comes down to the video, and we'll talk about that a little later in this interview. Everybody needs to have a video that sells them or their product or their company, promotes, markets, and sells them. But at every one of these events around the world, I give these stats about Israel and the Jewish people, and they always say to me 2 things. First of all, why? And I say, because anything that doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And therefore, the Jewish people have been hounded to their death and slaughtered, and they suffered the Holocaust at the hands of Adolf Hitler in Nazi Germany, and they were slaves in Rome. And, you know, the list goes on and on. The Jewish people have been persecuted like no other people in the history of the world. But you know what? That was a blessing from God because, you know, it makes you stronger. and it's resulted in the Jewish people being so successful. They're that strong. So the first question people ask is why, and I say anything that doesn't kill you makes you stronger. The second question everybody shoots their hand up and asks at my events is, why should I care if I'm not Jewish? And my answer is, well, the Chinese people aren't Jewish either, but they're pretty smart, aren't they? The Chinese people believe in copying the best, learning and copying from the best. And the best-selling business books in China in the past decade are, here are some titles, The 8 Most Valuable Business Secrets of Jews, The Legend of Jewish Wealth, Jewish People and Business, The Bible of How They Live Their Lives. So the Chinese people are buying books like crazy about Jewish success and Israel success, and they're brilliant because the key to life is repetition and copying people that are good at what they do, and the Chinese people are doing it. Every one of you listening right now, that's why it applies to you. You don't have to be Jewish to learn how to be a risk taker. You don't have to be Jewish to learn how to be relentless. In short, that's what this book is all about. I could teach anyone how to do it, and it works.
So let's talk about that, because you write those exact words. You write, anyone can do this. For many of us, we have limiting beliefs. We say, oh, yeah, right, I listen to Wayne L. Root. He's Mr. Relentless. He's done all these things, and he talks about all the stuff that we should be able to do. But I don't know. I don't have evidence in my life that I can do this. So what is your recommendation for the path that we follow that says, wait a minute, I can change my thinking. I have a choice to say, I do like what Wayne's talking about. Now what do I do? What are those?
Well, I'll tell you what. Before I get to that list, which at this point I think it's probably smart to talk about the 9 rules of relentless chutzpah, because we just talked about the Jewish people in Israel, and these are the rules that I think the Jewish people have followed all these years. But before we get to that, you know, I want to answer your question. I'm an average person sitting at home, and I don't understand how I can be relentless, how I can do what Wayne's recommending, or how can I be more like the Jewish people of Israel. I have nothing to do with any of that. So here's my answer. Okay, when I got married, I married into a very strong Christian family, born-again Christian, evangelical Christian, of missionaries and ministers all around the world, my wife's family. And I automatically wound up with an adopted grandfather because my wife Deborah's grandfather just fell in love with me and became my adopted grandfather. He called me grandson and I called him grandpa. And we just loved each other. For the first minute we spent time together, he just loved my boldness and he loved my risk-taking. And I just loved what a sweet man he was, and I loved the fact that he was a fitness nut, which I am too. I'm a fitness fanatic, fitness enthusiast, and he was working out, you know, like a maniac when I met him in his late 80s and on into his 90s, working out like crazy at the Pasadena Athletic Club where he had an apartment above the gym, and he worked out every day in the gym for a couple hours. So we just fell in love with each other, and he in his whole life had never had any success at all business-wise. He just worked for a print shop his entire life and made small money and retired in his 70s. And by the time I met him, he'd been retired for 25 years. You know, he was going on close to 90 years old. And so he comes to me when he's about to celebrate his 92nd birthday. And he says to me, Wayne, you know, I admire you because you're always in the media. You're always in the news. And they think you're an important person, and I've been an unimportant person, an insignificant person, an anonymous person my entire life. How can I become famous like you? It'll be my 92nd birthday in 6 months, and here's the gift I want. I want you to make me famous. I want you to give me my 15 minutes of fame. And so that's a big, tall order to put on someone's shoulders. And I said, you know, give me a week. And let me think about this. And I went away and thought about it. And I came back a week later, and I called him up, and I said, Grandpa, here's my proposal. This will make you famous. If you're willing to jump out of an airplane with me and do a grandfather-grandson skydive. And Grandpa said, yes, let's do it. If you believe that this will give me my precious gift of a lifetime at the age of 92, let's do it. And I said, are you sure? You sure you're not scared? You could wind up dying. 92-year-old man jumping out of an airplane from 30,000 feet at 110 miles an hour? You sure you're not scared? And Grandpa said, Wayne, I'm jumping out of an airplane, so if I die, I'll be halfway to heaven. It's perfect. It's a great line. And so I said, okay, let's do it. So now I relentlessly went about making Grandpa famous because my whole life was on the line, in my opinion. If I failed him on this, then I failed my grandpa, and he died a broken man. So this was just tremendous pressure, and I just put my philosophy to the test, and I relentlessly attacked the media for 6 months, telling them grandpa's story and urging them to show up and watch him jump out of the airplane with me and do a grandpa-grandson skydive. And I created a video. I interviewed grandpa and took the video and sent it out to the media, another, you know, very important part of my life, videos. They work every time. You know, why as a kid do you have show and tell? Why don't you just tell your story? Because showing it makes all the difference in the world. And so why don't adults practice show and tell? Well, the people that follow me do. They know the most important thing in the world, no matter what your product is, whether it's you, whether it's your career, whether it's getting hired for a job or starting a business or selling a product, whatever it is, or PR, getting media, it always starts with a video. And so I make world-class videos that change people's lives. And if you can't send someone a video, if you just want to send them a bio in the mail or a resume in the mail or a letter in the mail or an email without a video attached, I promise you it'll get filed under G for garbage. People throw all that stuff out. They don't read anyone's bio anymore. They don't read anybody's resume. You got to be alive, come to life in a video. So I interviewed Grandpa, and I brought him to life. And he had some great lines like, I'll be halfway to heaven if we die, if it doesn't work out. And I sent it to the media. And the media liked it, and I followed up, and I bothered them. Another important thing, relentless follow-up, because the first time they might say yes, but then they'll forget about it if you don't relentlessly haunt them and hound them and hammer them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I followed up until literally the day before the jump, and then I followed up again. And so we jumped out of the airplane, and when we landed, there were 30 news organizations from all over the world. More importantly, we jumped at a specific time because NBC Television in Los Angeles, which, L.A. is at the time, I believe, was the number one metropolitan area in the United States. I think it was bigger than New York, but if it was number one, it was number two. And they opened the entire NBC News in L.A. with Grandpa and me landing on the ground and then interviewing Grandpa. That's how they opened the news at 5 o'clock. So we jumped at like 4:50, so we would land right in time for them to film it and get it on the news and then instantly do the interview live at like 5:01. And that's what happened. So Grandpa, who had been completely anonymous his whole life, Steve, winds up opening the news in Los Angeles where he's lived his entire life. He's the number one story on the news, 92-year-old, does grandpa-grandson skydive. And then 30 organizations interview him, so this takes like 2 hours standing there after he's jumped out of the airplane. And then we got in a limousine, which took us to the airport, and Grandpa flew first class for the first time in his whole life, 92 years old, first time he ever flew first class, tickets provided by the Rosie O'Donnell Show. And we flew to New York, first class, landed in New York, limo picked us up at the airport, first limo ride of Grandpa's life, by the way, to the airport in L.A. to get to New York, and then from the airport in New York, second limo ride of his life. And it drove us to the hotel. The next morning, we got up and did the Rosie O'Donnell Show. Grandpa opened the entire show and introduced Rosie on camera. Then Rosie interviewed him in front of the whole crowd and me, and then wheeled a cake out in front of the audience, 36 million people watching, and a live audience of, I don't know, a couple hundred people. And Grandpa and Rosie together made a wish and blew out the 92 candles, and Grandpa hugged Rosie, and his day was over. And suddenly he was on the map, and he was famous, and he had articles all over the United States. When we flew home, all I could tell you is it was just amazing. It was overwhelming. The pilot wanted to hear Grandpa's story on the flight home, and Grandpa told it to him, and he announced over the loudspeaker, "Can everyone sing happy birthday for Norm? He just turned 92 and just jumped out of an airplane," and the entire plane sang happy birthday to Grandpa. People were asking for his autograph. We're coming up from coach to first class to ask Grandpa for his autograph, and the stewardesses had to ask them to go back to their seats because it was a mob scene. And Grandpa was asked for an autograph, by the way, at Rosie's show by a famous movie star, Drew Barrymore. And that was Grandpa's favorite girl in the movies, and she was in the green room waiting to get on the show after Grandpa. And so when we went back, she was in the green room waiting to hug Grandpa and ask for his autograph. And then he came out of the show, and Estelle Getty, the star of Golden Girls, was getting out of a limo to come in and do Rosie's show. And she stopped Grandpa when she saw him coming out, and she says, what were you just doing on the show? Because we were coming out, you know, the stars entrance, you know, where the celebrities go in and out.
Sure.
And
yep.
Grandpa told her what he had done on the show, and she hugged him and said, you are my hero. Well, he watched Golden Girls every single week. So, I mean, this was the most amazing thing in his life. A 92-year-old print shop man comes home, is awarded the key to the city of Pasadena, is named Ageless Hero by Blue Cross Blue Shield, and gets 30 wedding invitations, 30 marriage proposals, 30 marriage proposals from strangers all over the United States, women all over this country, 30 of them, almost all of them 20 and 30 years younger than Grandpa.
Wow.
That's how important it is to be relentless. Grandpa waited 92 years for his 15 minutes of fame, for his moment in the sunshine, but it came. And luckily he had a grandson, or an adopted grandson anyway, that was completely relentless, that wouldn't rest till I made it happen. So don't ever tell me, anyone listening right now, that you can't make the impossible possible, you can't make miracles happen, you can't do something. If you've been a nobody 92 years and all of a sudden you want to be famous on one day, I even made that happen, you know? So don't tell me anything can't happen. If you're relentless, it can.
So Wayne, in the remaining time that we have, I want to make sure that we cover two very important points. One is, I would like you to spend a little more time talking about the power of video for you and for others. And then the second thing that I want to cover is I want to make sure that we give our audience some of the steps that they can begin to implement right away, while they're waiting to get the book when it's released, some steps that they can take right away to begin orienting themselves to be relentless towards the achievement of their own goals.
Well, you've just given me a mouthful, a lot of things to go over, a lot of them, and not enough time ever. This should be like a five-part series. We have enough for five parts. But I will say a few of my favorite sayings that all apply to this book. Luck is the residue of design. There is no luck in life. You design your luck, and it's all about how relentless you are. How about God helps those who help themselves? You know, I believe very strongly in God. I have a great faith in God and a great faith in myself. But you could sit here and pray till the cows come home. You know, if you've never been to college, you could pray, I'm going to be a lawyer. You've never been to college, you've never been to law school, and you're praying you're going to be a lawyer. God doesn't answer that prayer. You have to pray to God that you will have the strength to apply to college and then to do well and get straight A's and work hard enough to finish at the top of your class, and then that you'll have the strength to apply to law school and take the LSAT exams and get in and then do well in law school and then graduate law school and take the bar exam and graduate. In other words, you can't be a lawyer no matter how much you pray, no matter how hard you pray. God doesn't wave a wand and make you a lawyer. You still have to go through the steps. So God helps those who help themselves. This book shows you how to help yourself. How about another saying, the squeaky wheel gets the oil? That's one of my favorite sayings in life. You know, politically, whether you like Donald Trump or not, as we do this interview, Donald Trump is leading for president of the United States. Now, you may listen to this interview a year from now, and Donald Trump will have long been out of the race and not gone anywhere, dropped out, whatever, lost, whatever word you want to use. But at the moment, he went from nowhere to leading for president of the United States. He's made some statements that some call stupid, many call offensive, and he's leading for president of the United States. What is Donald Trump? Well, first of all, his quote is on the back of my book. He's one of the people that endorsed my book. He believes in me, and he loves this book, and I'm very proud of that fact. But this book could be Donald's philosophy, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. This book is about the fact that, you know, you have to fight relentlessly to put yourself on the map, that quiet people, nice people, don't finish first. What's that famous saying? Nice guys finish last. You know,
right.
And quiet people don't get anywhere. This book shows you, you know, how to be a bit of a loudmouth, how to get what you want and ask for it strongly. Heck, don't even ask for it. Demand it. You know, this book shows you how to get ahead in a crowded world. And those things are all important. But what's interesting about this book that Donald Trump probably has never talked about in any of his books, but for me it's important, is this book, the whole first half, is how to be the supercharging superhero. So that would be the Donald Trump philosophy, right? But the second half of the book is, in order to do that, you have to build a foundation of body, a foundation and a balance of body, mind, spirit, and soul. You know, interestingly and ironically, if you want to master the world, what allows you to master the world is first you have to master yourself. And to be a loudmouth, first you have to be quiet and master quietness in your body. And so this book shows you my positive addictions. This book shows you a 12-step program called Positive Addictions that allow you to quiet your mind and to become a super achiever by building a foundation and a balance of body, mind, spirit, and soul. So it teaches you prayer, meditation, affirmation, visualization, yoga, goal planning, a healthy diet and lifestyle, a morning walk, one of the most important things in the world that no one will ever tell you about. Really what it comes down to is, in order to master others, you have to first master yourself. And so this whole book is dedicated to mastering others, but first showing you how to find your own soul. And I've never seen a business book, Steve, that combines those two and then adds in a third thing. So really there's three things that are so powerful that I've never seen in a book together. One is how to master others, how to be this Donald Trump, you know, New York attitude guy who smashes his way through life. That's me, no question about it. Number two is how to master yourself. So you wouldn't expect the guy who's teaching you about the Donald Trump bodaciousness and the Mike Tyson smash in the face is also the guy that's going to teach you about yoga, meditation, prayer, and a morning walk, and a healthy diet and lifestyle, holistic, healthy, and organic. You wouldn't expect that. That's me. And then number three is relentless video. Those are the three things you can't live without in life. You've got to have a relentless video. So you just asked me about video. Everything I've ever achieved in my life, I achieve with a video. I was a kid in a dead-end urban school that almost died twice, the last time with a machete at my neck, fighting for my life, and yet I wound up getting into Columbia University. And I beat out kids that were a lot smarter, had better grades, had better families, had more money, and I did it with a video. There's no time to go into how or why. You got to read the book to find out how the video did it. But I owe that video is what got me into Columbia University and changed my life. And when I became the anchor man on CNBC with no prior experience on television, another amazing story in my life, a miracle. I don't think anyone's ever done it before or since in the history of America, get on TV with no prior experience on TV and become the number one anchor man of a major American TV network. And I did it with a video. And when I got the vice presidential nomination to the Libertarian Party, I did it with a video. And all 10 book deals were because of videos, 10 different videos. And all three of my TV series that I sold were because of videos. And my daughter getting into Harvard was because of videos. Every story, Grandpa Norm becoming famous for his 92nd birthday and getting 30 marriage proposals, all of that was because of a video. So videos are such an important part of my life, and I am as relentless with videos as I am with every other portion of my life. You know, I produce the best. I'm someone, ask my son who's produced my videos and edited them and directed them since he was 9 years old. Now he's 15, so he's a veteran. He'll probably go on and become a famous movie director one day. Hudson is my son, and at the age of 15, he's done this for 6 years since the age of nine. And Hudson will tell you that when I make videos for major companies and for individuals and for small businesses, all kinds of groups, I do it from big to small, and I get paid a lot of money for these videos by big companies, and he thinks the first take is fantastic. You know, it's a two-minute script, and I read it flawlessly, not a single mistake. Why do you need to do a second take, Dad? Well, because I'm a perfectionist, and I'm relentless, and it's got to be the best ever. The reason they're going to hire me and the reason they're going to keep retaining me is because it's the best they've ever seen. I don't want to give them any chance to ever fire me or find someone better. So now we do a second take. And to him, it sounds just like the first one. But I know that it's better because a couple of words have come out with a slightly different inflection. I hit the right note at the right time. So to me, it's better. I'm not sure if anyone else would ever know. But to me, the second take's better than the first. So now we do a third take. And he goes, Dad, why would we do a third take? The first two were fine. Because I'm a perfectionist, and I want it to be the best of the best of the best. Well, guess what? We wind up doing eight takes, and it takes an hour. It could have been done on the first take. The average person would have never noticed the difference between take one and take eight, but I know the difference. And the last one was the best one. I always stop whenever it is. It might be the third. It might be the sixth. It might be the eighth. But I know when the take is absolutely perfect and I've put everything together and the energy level is exactly right, the enthusiasm is exactly right, and every word I've hit on the exact right note, And I go, we're done. And my son shakes his head and says, I don't get it. To me, all eight sounded exactly the same. But then I have him play them back, and I point out to him where the inflection changed, where the word changed, where my attitude changed. And he goes, you know what? You're right. I see it now. I'm relentless in everything I do, and that's why I'm successful. I don't ever let anyone beat me at anything I do, Steve. No one's going to make a better video in this world than I do. And if it takes 20 takes to make it perfect in every way, in every word that of the two-minute video, then we'll take 20 takes and it'll take 2 hours. I don't care.
Wayne, if someone wants to talk to you about having you do a video for them, how should they reach you?
Well, the easy way to contact me is on email. That's the easiest way. I'm on email 24 hours a day, no matter where I am in the world. And I am a one-man army. I really am the law firm of me, myself, and I. And so at various times in my life, I've hired hundreds and hundreds of employees. And to be honest with you, today it's me, myself, and I. I mean, that's the team. It's Team Root. It's me and my 15-year-old son, Hudson, produce every video. So you can contact me directly. And the best way to do that is to email me. And it's WayneRoot@gmail.com. I mean, I have 20 emails, but they all come into the same main email, which is WayneRoot, R-O-O-T, @gmail.com. And you can call me from anywhere in the United States toll-free, 888-444-ROOT, just like my last name. 888-toll-free, 444-R-O-O-T, which is 888-444-7668.
So if they mentioned that they heard about this on this teleseminar today, are you going to give them a little special consideration?
Yeah, I'm going to give them a special price that you and I pre-agreed to that gets them the lowest cost that I've ever done a video for. So every single person, if you mention you heard it through Steve Polite's teleseminar with Wayne Root, you will get the best price that's ever been available to the public in all the years that I've been doing these videos.
Fantastic. So, Wayne, we're getting close to the end here. What summary points would you like to make before we conclude?
Well, I think the summary points, we could finish up very quickly if I just do a very quick one-liner on each one. There are literally 9 takeaways from why the people of Israel are so amazingly successful. You seem to have been, at the beginning of this interview, Steve, fascinated by the success of Israel as such a tiny country, one of the smallest countries in the world, and about the size of Rhode Island, and yet it's by every measure one of the top 5 countries in the world, and by per capita measure, meaning based on population, it's number 1 in the world in every economic category. Why is that? Well, I think the Jewish people learn, number 1, to be successful. Rule number 1 is you've just got to be relentless. There's no other mindset. You just must refuse to lose. You cannot be defeated. And the Jewish people have been murdered and killed and raped and tortured and enslaved and robbed, but they've never been defeated, and they've come out on top every single time. So anything that doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Rule number 2 is you should live your life with a chip on your shoulder. You know, I think that's the reason why everyone listening will agree. Most of the time when you meet people who are born rich, they live miserable lives. It's something I'd never understood before. How come every kid born to a rich family is not a super achiever? They're almost always a low achiever. They're always stoned on pot. They ruin their lives with drugs. They're in and out of drug rehab, or they're drunks, or they get a girl pregnant at the age of, 14, or they wind up in jail, or they just spend dad's money into bankruptcy. Most people who are born on top of the world have no incentive and don't feel motivated. So I think the Jewish people have always had a chip on their shoulder. They're an underdog at all times. I know I have always felt like an underdog. It's in my blood, I think, and it drives you to outperform and out-hustle everybody else around you. Number 3, stop complaining and take action. And I think another way to say that is stop bitching and start pitching. And so I've been a pitcher my whole life. I pitch deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I never complain. There's no time in my day to complain because I'm too busy pitching deals. That's all I do all day long, is put deals together and pitch people that I meet on hiring me to do a video, or hiring me to publish a new book, or buying my new TV series, or buying my products. So I'm pitching all day. I have no time to bitch. I'm too busy pitching. So stop complaining. And once you stop complaining and take action, you'll probably find out that if you had stopped complaining earlier, you'd have no reason to ever complain or protest. So that's my theory in life, and that's number three. That's the Jewish people. Number four is life is short, so don't just take action. Take action now. Most people say, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it next week. I'll do it next month. It's on my calendar for next year. Or I'll do it next hour. And guess what? They never do it. Life is short. Take action now. Anything I don't do this hour probably doesn't get done. So when I think of something, I do it now. Number five is lemons to lemonade. The Jewish people certainly understand how you take a challenge and you turn it into a learning experience, and the, what you learn from that tragedy or that pain or that failure or that rejection is what makes sure that the next thing you do is an amazing, wonderful, remarkable, magical, phenomenal success. Number six is take control of your life, personal responsibility. You know, an awful lot of people in this country are on welfare, entitlements. I believe it's now 48 straight months of 45 million Americans on food stamps, 45 million or more Americans on food stamps, 48 months in a row, an all-time record. There are 107 million Americans getting entitlement checks of some kind, getting welfare of some kind, and there's 144 million households in America where at least one member of the household is on some form of welfare, gets a government check. And so I think what you can learn from Israel and the Jewish people is never depend on others. In other words, they've been so betrayed and so enslaved and so murdered and so persecuted and so targeted by others, they only depend on themselves. They don't ask government to take care of them. And so never depend on anyone to take care of you or control your life but you. How do you do that? You own your own business. You own your own home. You own your kids' future and by owning their education. You either send them to private school or charter school or a religious school, parochial school, Catholic school, or you homeschool them like we did with our children. You know, and my son, by the way, I told you my daughter just graduated Harvard, magna cum laude. My son, as an example, I have four kids, but my son is 11 years old. I've told you about remarkable 15-year-old Hudson, who runs my video business since he's nine. But Remington just turned 11, and he just took his national exams to see where he matched up against every kid in America, his Stanford national exams. He just graduated fifth grade as a homeschooler, and he got his test scores back just 2 days ago, and he tested post-high school in every category.
Wow.
So in other words, he's college-ready after fifth grade. So
wow.
That's taking control of your kid's life. Don't look for a job. Create your own job. Build your own business. Buy your home and own it. Own your business. Own your kid's education. Never depend on others. Number seven, do what no one else really wants to do. Most people are afraid to sell for a living. But the only people who get rich in America are those who sell. As a matter of fact, remember the California gold rush?
Absolutely.
Everybody who went there to mine for gold, most of them all came home broke, penniless, with nothing. They died with nothing. But Levi Strauss, who, by the way, happened to be Jewish, Levi Strauss went to California, and he said, I don't want to mine for gold. I want to sell the picks and the axes and the sandwiches and the jeans to all those people that are mining. He became a billionaire. Selling is what makes you rich in life. And I think the Jewish people are very good at it for a specific reason. Once someone has chased you and tried to murder you and taken your home away and taken your belongings away and taken people you love away, once you've experienced the Holocaust, getting on the phone and selling people doesn't seem like such a big deal. Number eight is be fearless, and that ties in, of course, to number seven, because what's the worst thing that could happen in life? People try and hound you to death and murder you and take everything away from you. So why would you fear opening a business? Why would you fear selling? Why would you fear raising money? You know, I remember I was scared to death to raise money for a business, but then I went out and did it, and I needed $6 million, and I raised $18 million. And so, you know, you've got to be fearless about things that really in the long run don't matter. Raising money and opening a business, risking your money in a business. In the long run of life, it's a pimple. It doesn't matter. People chasing you to put a noose around your neck or shove you into a gas oven to gas you to death, guess what? That matters in the scheme of things. So stop worrying about little things like raising money or opening a business or selling, getting on the phone and selling someone. Those are all a piece of cake compared to the risks that the Jewish people have been through. And number nine is always take risks. You cannot be rich in America without being a risk-taking, riverboat gambling gunslinger. And every turn of my life, I was a risk taker. Can you imagine a guy wanting to be the number one gambler in Vegas and the king of Vegas, and I'd never been to Vegas? Can you imagine a guy thinking he should be a national TV anchorman and he's never been on TV one day in his life? And then literally making up a videotape, sending it out, and calling up every TV station in America and hounding them and hammering them and harassing them until they were willing to talk to me on the phone, and eventually I became a national TV anchorman. Those are all scary things. You got to be willing to take risks. Can you imagine wanting to be on a presidential ticket when you've never been in politics in your life and you're a gambler from Vegas? And I did it. And so every step of the way, the books, the TV shows, all of them. Imagine, you know, being a risk taker and putting your daughter's entire future in the hands of homeschooling and thinking, having the nerve, the audacity to think she'll get into Harvard or Stanford, the two schools I made her aim at since she was literally born. 18 years of brainwashing her that she was going to go to Harvard or Stanford, and she's accepted at both. All of these are big risks, folks. All my businesses, I put up tremendous money in risk, and they all turned out to be winners, even the ones that lost. We're learning experiences, lemons to lemonade. So that's what this book really comes down to, is those 9 key points that the people of Israel have used to propel themselves to amazing success. And all of them come down to being relentless, being relentlessly high energy, relentlessly enthusiastic, relentless risk taker. You name it, every step of the way, you've got to be relentless.
Well, you know I love doing these interviews. So exciting, so inspirational. Thank you so much. Before we say final goodbyes, tell everyone what websites you would like them to take a look at for more information about you.
Sure, WayneRoot.com. How's that for simple? It's a brand new website, by the way, that just went up days ago. WayneRoot.com, named after yours truly. And it just gives you some idea of the flavor of what I do in life, what I've accomplished in life, and what I can do for you, the videos I can create for you. Just make sure if you email me or contact me, you mention that you heard about it from Steve Polites, this specific teleseminar with Wayne Allen Root, so I can give you a price that the general public has never before gotten and will never get. I made that promise to Steve, and I will relentlessly abide by that promise.
Wayne, you're fantastic. Thanks for writing this book. It's going to be a tremendous help for anyone who buys it, studies it, and takes action with the guidance in this book. It's a tremendous resource. Thank you so much for you and for this new book.
Thank you, Steve. And by the way, I even have to give you a PS as we end this interview, because we never had a chance in the hour to mention it. It all comes down to relentless motion. You know, I'm a guy people say is in motion 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. This book teaches you how to be in relentless motion. And there's 3 parts of it. That's why I call it triad: relentless physical motion, relentless mental motion, and relentless financial motion. And this book gets you into high gear, supercharge you in all 3 areas. And even as I do this interview, I've been walking and pacing the entire time. I can't sit, you know, and I want to create that same kind of energy level for you, relentless motion, and you find out how to do it with the perfect game plan in the power of relentless.
Wayne, you over-deliver. Thank you so much. Have a great, great evening. Tell your family we said hello and send our love to all of you.
Thank you, Steve. God bless, and congratulations on your fantastic daughter in veterinary school. Fantastic. Congratulations. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.